Aleph, the Mishnah, first Mishnah, that is. Mishnah says, Ha'omer Harel Ere Machvas. The person says, now we've learned before, and we've been learning throughout the Masechta, that among the various menachos that a person can bring voluntarily, there's two types. Here in this week's parasha now, it talks about that there are two types of menachos that are fried, and they're called Machvas and Minchas Machvas and Minchas Malcheshes. As we're going to see, a machvas is a, we're going to see the difference about the, between the machvas and the malcheshes we're going to see now in our Mishnah and the Gemara. So first of all, if a person says that I vow to bring a mincha made in a machvas, lo yavim malcheshes, then he can't bring a mincha made in a malcheshes. So, in other words, it's one thing, the various other kinds of menachos. You have the war flour, you have the two types of baked ones. So, fine, if a person says, for example, I'm bringing chalas, and instead he brings you the kikin, you could argue, which are thin wafers, you could argue that that is completely different, but machvas and malcheshes, on the face of it, they're both fried, and there shouldn't be much of a difference. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling you there's a difference. So you shouldn't do that. But machreshes and vice versa. If he says, I'm going to bring a mincha in a machreshes, lo yavi b'machvas, then he shouldn't bring one that's made in a machvas. If he does, he's not yotze. Mabid machvas to machreshes. What is the actual difference between them? Machreshes liyash lo kisi machvas en lo kisi divrei Rabbi Yosi HaGlili. Rabbi Yosi HaGlili says the difference is just that the machreshes has a cover and the machvas does not. So according to him, in other words, both of them, they might both be shallow, they might both be deep. The only difference is whether they have a cover. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel omer, Malcheshes amukka. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says the Malcheshes is a deep pan, umaser ruchshin, racking, and the mincha that's made in it is ruchshin means literally it moves around. Racking would mean it's soft. It's much softer over there because it's much softer. So Rashi explains basically, in other words, because the oil remains collected in it, and therefore the mincha that's made in it ends up being very soft because it absorbs a lot of oil. Machvas tsofa, as opposed to the machvas, is it floats. In other words, there's no. It actually explains tsofa, which means floats, means shulah tsofa and etzel egneha. It means that the bottom of it is floating next to the rims of it. In other words, it doesn't really have much of a rim. It's basically more like a flat griddle. Umaser in koshin, and therefore the mincha that's made out of it is hard because therefore the oil spreads out, and therefore so not much of it gets absorbed into the mincha, and therefore the mincha ends up being hard and ends up being harder and stiffer. So according to Rashi, in other words, the sole difference, so it comes out to the way Rashi is explaining over here, the sole difference between machvas and machreshes, according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, is just the shape of the keli, and therefore the amount of oil that gets retained in the keli, and therefore what happens with the mincha. The Rambam goes further. The Rambam says that actually to be the dough itself is made stiffer with a minchas machvas than a minchas marcheshes. So in other words, the Rambam is saying that you also have to make sure the dough itself doesn't fall off the edges. In fact, there are explanations that according to the Rambam, it literally was flat and had no sides at all, whereas according to Rashi, it had sides, just very low ones. But in any case, according to Rashi, the idea would be that it's not so much the dough itself was made a different consistency, but rather that it was made the same consistency before it was fried, but then once it's fried in a shallow pan and not much of the oil stays in because most of it tends to go to the sides because it's not deep. Therefore, the mincha comes out stiffer because it doesn't absorb as much oil. Whereas according to the Rambam, the actual dough itself is made stiffer when it comes to a minchas machvas. As we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, we had Reb Shimon pointing out that therefore, so here we talked about in the Mishnah, if a person says, I'm going to bring a machvas and brings a machesha, so vice versa. At the very beginning of the Masechta, we talked about a person brings a machvas and the koyin does the kmitza, or whichever of the other avodah is having in mind that it's a machesha, so vice versa, where we had said, according to the chachamim, the person is not yotze because it's not lishma, and according to Reb Shimon, it doesn't matter because as we learned there, maaseh mechichin olaha, it's very very clearly obvious that it's a machlas or macheshes, respectively, because of its consistency. And we have the whole sugya over there, what exactly the Mishnah means by that, the different opinions in every case. But so now we're saying that, yes, indeed, machlas and macheshes do in fact have a different consistency, according to Rashi, just because of the way they're fried, and according to the Rambam, also because of the way the dough is made to begin with. So the Gemara says, my time is Rabbi Yossi. Why does Rabbi Yossi really say that the only difference between the machvas and the machashas is that whether it has a cover or not? Elena, are you going to say that he understood like this? What does the word machashas mean? So according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it's easy to understand because the word machashas, Rashi says, loshin remes to metagmin and rachshin. It's like a creeping creature where you have the word remes for it in various places in Chumash, and it's translated rachash. So it means like something that moves around. So, the idea would be the minchas machashas, because the mincha made in it is softer, and absorbs more oil, therefore you touch it and it quivers and shakes more. It's almost more like a jello-like consistency, unlike a machlas, which is stiffer. But according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, why would the word machashes refer to that it has a cover? Even a machashes ta'asya aruchushe halev, are you going to say that he considers that a person might bring a minchas machashes where he had, because he did an aveira, of thinking something wrong in his heart? And the heart is covered within the body. Therefore, you would argue, according to him, then the appropriate mincha to bring would be one that's made in a covered pan. Kedichtiv, as you find the pasuk, Ruach Hashlimi Yavar Toiv, the author of that Kapitel Tehillim, Kapitel Mem Hei, says my heart is quivering with a good thing. In other words, my heart is aroused and inspired to sing to Hashem. So therefore, you would see that the word rachash refers to thoughts of the heart. Machvas, meanwhile, you would say minchas machvas, the asya machvoy apeh, that would refer to something where a person did an aveira by barking with his mouth. For example, Rashi says rechilus, machvoy manbach nabuchi, like the expression that people say about barking, speaking and barking. So the idea would be, in other words, Rabbi Yossi Aglili would understand that the machashas comes for averus that a person did in secret, and such as hirhurim royim, or not so much inside himself, within his heart, that which is only knowable to him, and the other one, the machmas, which is uncovered, would refer to averus that he does in an uncovered way in front of everyone. So the problem with that is ema ipcha, but maybe you could just as well say the other way around. You could say, fine, you have those definite. You have one of them is for hidden averus, and the other one for revealed ones. But ema ipcha, but you could argue the other way around. Machvas to asya machvoy halev. On the contrary, you could argue that a machvas is for something that's hidden in the heart. Machvoy meloshin chova. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, lomanach beisol izroyach. As Lavan says to Yaakov, why do you hide yourself and run away? So you see that the shodosh of the word machvas can here before you're saying that it's that machvas is related to novach, which means to bark and means something expressed verbally, but maybe on the contrary, it can also be related to the word nachbesa, which means hidden, which means you hid yourself from me. So you hid yourself from me, and you hid your intentions from me, and you hid yourself from me. Lavan accuses Yaakov. Whereas machashas to ase aruch bushel, and machashas would mean for something that moves, namely the moving of the lips. Kedami and she have a merachshan sifsoise as the expression that his lips were moving. So therefore, you see that either of those words can mean, so both words can mean hidden, and both of them can be expressed. And in that case, then you would say the other way around, then maybe a machvas should be covered, and a machashas should be uncovered. So you're right, the Gemara says, al gemara gemuri law. Rather, the answer is that Rabbi Yossi is not basing himself on the logic of what the words machashas and the word machmas means, but rather he's basing himself on what he learned as a Kabbalah from his Rebbein. So, okay. So, So that's what it is then. So he says the only difference is that it's covered or uncovered. And yeah, once he says that the machlas is uncovered and the machlas is covered, then yeah, we can also say what we said that in fact. So in fact, then the Vilna Gaon says that in fact that the, that the, therefore we would go back to the original understanding that a person might bring a machlas when he did when he thought something wrong in his heart, rochash libi davar tov, or in this case something the opposite of tov, and machlas he'd bring for saying something verbally, man mach nevuchi, for barking out something wrong. So that's what he holds. Next, Rabbi Chananel ben Gamliel, said that no, the definition is that a machlas is deep and a machlas is shallow, whether we mean just shallow, it has low walls like Rashi, or whether maybe like the Rambam is completely flat like a griddle. Either way, we said there's a difference between the mincha that's made between them. So the Gemara says, Marcheshes Amukka, according to him, a Marcheshes is deep, and we know that, Dichtib, because the Pasuk says, V'chol Nasa Va Marcheshes, because the Pasuk says, everything that's made in a Marcheshes, implying that the Mincha is made inside it. In fact, as Fasanus points out, that would also work nicely, according to Rabbi Yosef, really, it's covered, then of course the dough is inside it as well. Anyway, machlas tzofah, as opposed to the machlas, is more floating. Dichtiv va'al machlas, because the pasuk continues that he made something on a pan, implying that it's on it, not in it. And again, I mean, that can also work according to Rabbi Yosef Levi, because it's on it. There's no cover, and therefore you don't have any part of the machlas that is on top of the dough. Suppose a person says, I'm obligating myself to bring a marcheshes. Now, had he said ba marcheshes, then it would mean, had he said ba marcheshes, then it would be clear that he has to bring a minchas marcheshes. But now he's saying the word harei olam marcheshes, then we don't know, does he mean that he vows to bring a mincha made in a marcheshes, or does he mean to bring an actual marcheshes pan? So therefore, the Shammai says you have to leave the money aside until the Yahu comes. He's not going to be able to be Yotze his neder. Why? And because the Shammai has a suffix. Is it called a Minchas Marcheshes or Machvas, respectively, because it's named after the keli in which it's made? A Minchas Machvas is made in a Machvas, and Minchas Marcheshes is made in a Marcheshes. And now, when he says, Harei Olam Marcheshes, or Harei Olam Machvas, then he's saying, in effect, I vow to bring a keli of that name. Or is it named after the type of mincha that results from it, where we said one is rishin, one moves and quivers easily, and the other one is sifr. So maybe he said he's going to bring a mincha. So now he can't fix it up. So therefore, Beis Shammai says that the Yehi Monachat Shiyava Eliyahu, you're going to have to wait until Eliyahu comes and clarifies it. Now Tosfos points out, I mean, what's the problem? I mean, we have examples towards the end of our Masechta where a person, for example, says, I'm making a neder to bring such and such, and then he forgot what he'd said, or he's not sure, or whatever, and then he brings all the different types, and then he's yotze. So why are we here? Let him bring a minchas machvas, let him bring a minchas machashas, and he'll be covered. But Tosfos says, or for that matter, let him bring a mincha and a marcheshes, and therefore he's covered. So Tosfos says, let's say, for example, he said this money or this flour should be for marcheshes. So now we don't know what to do with it. Should we use the money to actually buy a minchas marcheshes and he'll bring that, or should we use the money to buy the keli, the marcheshes, and he'll bring that? So that would be the explanation. That would be Tosfos' explanation of why he can't just do both of them. Why he can't just do both of them and be yotze that way. There are a couple of other explanations. Shitim Kubetzis explains the question is: are there in fact two kalim of that name? Are there in fact two kalim? One called Machlas and one called Marcheshes? Or does it mean there was only one kali? And with one you'd put in more oil, or the other less oil, or according to the Yosef Levi, one you would cover, and the other one you would uncover, and you don't know which one he should do. And then there are several other different explanations. But Basila, I remember Basila says, no, there's no problem. kli hayu mikdash malcheshes shma. There was a keli in the bais mikdash named malcheshes. So if he says that I'm going to bring a malcheshes, then it's very clear that it means that he's going to bring he's going to donate an actual malcheshes to the bais mikdash. What does it look like? Says Beis Hillel. But doim come in kalvus omoik. It looked like a deep kalvus. Rashi explains that a kalbos is a frying pan. However, the wall of it is bent inward, so it comes out looking kind of rather the diagram in Rashi that draws it as like a U shape. So in other words, it was a pan. It had a handle, and then it had a handle, and then it had a pan sticking out of it. But instead of a regular frying pan that we're familiar with, which is roundish, or which is usually round, this one was shaped like the actual pan part was shaped like a U. Then there were inside it there were round carve outs throughout on the whole surface of it, where you would put each individual mincha into there, or each individual part of the mincha. As we've learned before, most menachas have to be divided into 10 challahs. So you would take the dough and make them into small balls and put each one of those balls into one of those spaces. So it would be like kind of in a muffin pan or whatever you have, where you have cutouts to put it in. Here you had the same. Here you had round cutouts like that throughout the thing. So in Rashi there's a diagram like that that shows it like that as a U shape. There's a diagram on the side in Shittim Ukubetzis and Hagos Fetzionim that instead draws it as round with a bunch of holes in it, but that's really more to illustrate the holes. That's not to illustrate the keli itself, because we're saying that it was shaped like a kalbos, which is like a pair of tongs or tweezers or something like that. So that was what it was shaped like, says Basil. When you put the dough into the individual cups there that are made in it, then it resembles the apples of Barsiim, which are from a certain place. In other words, they look round like small apples. Earlier in the Masechta, we had in the description of the Menorah, we had Tapuche Krasiim with a cough instead of a vase. Could be that over here it's supposed to be the same kind of thing as well. So in other words, basically on the side there's a note that the Oruch explains. It means, in other words, basically round except for one place, except for like with an apple, you have it's basically round except for the place where it goes in for the stem. So these would end up shaped like that as well. Another way of looking at the shape, another way of looking at the shape would be like the acorns of the Greeks. So they would come out looking like that, as small round pieces which go into those cutouts in the bottom of them of the malcheshes, and then you put in the oil and then you fry them. And the Sibyl says, I can show you that the keli itself is called that, because the pasuk says, "B'chol nasa v'machreshes v'amachvas." The pasuk says, anything that's made in the machreshes or on the machvas. So you can't say, in other words, that it just means different kinds of mincha of necessity. It actually has to be different kinds of kelim. So fine, then you have within that, in the Mishnah we had Rabbi Yosef Levi saying that's really the same keli. The difference is whether it has a cover or not, and therefore, in other words, whether the oil boils off faster, or whether the cover is kept on, and appointed upon it, and it's a difference in the actual depth of the keli. So therefore, Sibisil says, Al Shuma Kalim Nikru Veloy Al Shuma Asayim. So obviously they're named after the Kalim, and not just after the Maisim, not just after the consistency of it. So therefore, if a person says that I'm going to bring a malcheshes, then clearly it means he's supposed to bring that kind of keli and donate it to the Beis Hamikdash, either that, or he'll give the money to the treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash, and they'll buy a keli of that kind, and that way he'll be yotze his neder. So the Mishnah continues. Now let's talk about the two kinds of fried mincha, the machmas and the malcheshes. Now let's talk about the baked menachas, where the Torah also tells us that a person can bring. Here we have many of the dinim of menachas. So in this week's parasha, some of them are next ones. So the Torah tells us that if a person wants to bring chisakri, korban mincha, mafe tamil, a person wants to bring a mincha baked in an oven, then he has his choice, solus, it's going to be made out of fine flour either way, chalas matzahs, balugs bashemen, either chalas matzahs, thick loaves of matzahs that are mixed with oil, or kikei matzahs, mishulchan bashemen, or wafers of matzahs, which are smeared with oil, and then in the perek after next, in the seventh perek, that's the Shem, we'll talk about the details of how those are made. But first, let's talk about what kind of oven they need to be made in. Harei alai b'tanur, a person says, I'm going to bring an oven, a mincha that's made in an oven. Lo yovi ma'isik kupach, he should not bring it baked in a kupach. So a kupach, you have it all over Shas, Rashi defined it over here, as well, is that it means an oven or a stove where you have only enough room for putting one pot. The usual distinction is as follows. A tanur is an oven. It has very thick walls and it retains its heat very well. Usually you might have room to put more than one pot on it, but even a small oven though, you still have, though it has thick walls and it retains its heat. It's wider on the bottom, it's narrower on the top, and therefore it retains its heat, and it also has thick walls. So then you have throughout Shas, you have a kira, which is a stove, which would be a place large enough to put two pots, but it has thinner walls. It's usually, and it's then squarish. It's the same width on top and on bottom. And then you have a kupach, which is a half kira. So it's the same thing, thinner walls, same width on top and on bottom, and it has room for only one pot. So you can't bring a mincha that's made in a kupach. Another distinction, actually, that Amma mentions, another distinction as well, is that in Pirush Mishnayos, that the difference is a kupach, you would fire it up so it's hot, then you would sweep out all of the fire, and then you would put the bread in for baking, I guess, because otherwise the bread would touch the wood on the ashes and whatever and get dirty. So in any case, you can't do that. It has to be dafka in oven. V'loy macher ofim. It also can't be baked on hot bricks or hot tiles. V'loy macher yoris ha'arvim, and also not one that's baked in the ovens of the Arabs. So Rashi just says that these are the Rashi doesn't specify over here. He just says that this is a place where this is the kind where people live among the Arabs, and they fire them up and they bake challahs in them. Rashi doesn't specify what's wrong with them. Then other places it explains in Shas, and then the Rambam brings over here in Pirush Mishnayos that there were actually a hole dug in the ground. They would dig a hole in the ground and plaster it, and then they would bake and then they would bake bread in that. They would put fire in it, heat it up, and then take out and then bake the bread there. There are a few other explanations. So the point is, none of those are, the Torah specifies tanur, which is an oven. So none of those things are an oven. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rotza Mevi Matha Kupach. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you want, you could bring a mincha that was baked in an oven, in a kupach, because a kupach is at least a type of oven. Fine, it's not exactly like an oven. It's not wider on bottom and narrower on top, so it retains its heat more. It's not, and maybe it's got thinner walls, but nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says it basically meets the definition of a tanur. By the way, this kind of thing, the distinction between a tanur and a kira and a kupach, comes up in many places in halacha, and in Hilchos Shabbos, and in Masechta Shabbos, and it was recently in Rambam and in Shlosha Parakim. There's the distinction, for example, that because an oven retains its heat for much longer, therefore you have dinim about even about leaving food on or in an oven on Shabbos, unless you covered the fire with a blech, sometimes or in those days with ashes, sometimes if you took out all the fire, nevertheless there's still dinim about not being able to put food on there or keep food on there on Shabbos, because there's so much heat over there, because an oven will retain very strongly whatever heat it has, so even you left over a little bit of the coals, you might stir them in order to heat it up, as opposed to with a kira and a kupach, you have different dinim, because depending on what kind of fuel was used, because with those, they, uh, they don't retain their heat as much anyway, and therefore you have certain dinim over there about if you covered a fire or you bank the fire with ashes or you sweep it out, or in modern terms you put a brach on it, then you're allowed to put food, and then you're allowed to keep food there on Shabbos. The whole dinim of shihia and hatzmana, which are rather complex actually, but we see in that and in many other areas of halacha where there is a difference between these various types of cooking utensils. The Mishnah continues, Harela Minchas Mafe, a person said, I'm going to bring a mincha that was baked. And we learned before that it has to be baked, and it has to be baked into 10 chalas. Also, the fried ones, as we said before, have to be fried as 10 pieces. So lo yavi mechza chalas or mechza rikikin, he can't bring some of them as chalas and some of them as rikikin, some of them as thick loaves and some of them as wafers. So actually, Rashi later in the Masechta points out that they're the same thing, with the difference that the chalas, the oil is mixed in with the dough when they're being made, and the roki and the rikikin, it's smeared on afterwards. So according to Rashi, there may not be that distinction between that one's thick and one's thin, but just the difference of how the oil is applied. Anyway, the Tanakhama is saying that you have to bring it's all of one or all of the other. Reb Shimon Matzim, if Neshu Korban Echad, Reb Shimon allows you to bring half of one, half of the other, because it's all one Korban, it's all basically one type of Korban, and therefore it's fine to mix and match and do some of them, and do some one, some the other. We learned this a couple of times in the last couple of blah, where the Papa had pointed out a couple of times in the Mishnayos that the Mishnah is mentioning 10 types of Mincha, and one explanation of Rashi, and we said, not like Reb Shimon, that you could bring half and half, and one explanation of Rashi was that it means that since according to Reb Shimon, you could bring some of one and some of the other, then in effect you have an extra kain mincha, namely you have when it comes to baked menachas. So you can have all chalas, or rikikin, or half and half. The Minchas Chinuch points out that another nafkamina lahalacha would be, what if a person makes a neder, he's going to bring chalas, according to Rabbi Yehuda. He dafkas to bring chalas, and he wouldn't be yotze if he brings rikikin, whereas according to Reb Shimon, he could bring some of one and some of the other, because it's all considered the same carbon. So let's go to this din that we said in the Mishnah that you have to bake them dafka in a tanner and not any other kind of cooking utensil. Tanner Rabbanan. That when the pasuk says mafes sanur, when it says mincha baked in an oven, that means dafka in an oven. V'loy mafes kupach, so not one that was baked in a kupach. V'loy mafes ofim, or that was baked on hot bricks or tiles. V'loy mafes yeris harvim, or one that was baked in the pots or the holes in the ground or whatever of the Arabs. Rabbi Yehuda says, again, the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had disagreed and said you could bring it if it's made in a kippah. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tanur, shnei pamim, since the Torah says the word tanur twice, once in Parshas Vayikra and one in Parshas Tzav, therefore, lahakshra, mafa kupach, therefore that tells us that it means that that you could even bring it in a kupach, because it's called in ribuy achar ribuy el lamayg. When the Torah is telling us twice the ribuy that it has to be a tanur, then it would mean it's to be mamayg. It tells us therefore we can exclude, and we can say it's not only a tanur. In fact, it would be a kupach as well. So he says that actually you could actually bring it in a kupach, precisely because the Torah says tanur twice, and therefore that means that therefore the second time is telling us that it can be not only a tanur, it can be something else as well. So it's a little hard to understand. I mean, just the opposite, where he's including a kupach, he's not taking it away, and on the contrary, it should mean dafka tanur. So the Hagoras Bach flips it around. He says, in miut, acha miut, el rabbis. On the contrary, it's saying that each time it says tanur is a miut, only a tanur. So if you have a miut after a miut, then it means el rabbis, then it means to include, and fakert, it would mean that you include a kupach. So there is actually another explanation. One of the Mefarshim, the Korban Aaron, explains that this is that the words tanur shnei pamim is actually, he says there are actually three opinions over here. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you could do a kupach. The Tanakhama is saying that not, because ein ribuy, achar ribuy elo lamayin. So he says, of course it says twice tanur, but on the contrary, you, Rabbi Yehuda, are saying because it says tanur twice, therefore kupach is fine, but the Tanakhama would say on the contrary, no, ein ribuy, achar ribuy elo lamayin, and on the contrary, therefore it's excluding the kupach. Okay. The Mishnah continues, the Braisa continues, Rav Shimon Omer, Tanur, Tanur, Shnei Pa'amim, when it says Tanur twice, that means, so according to Rav Yehuda, we're saying that includes a Kupach. According to the Tanakhama, maybe we're saying on the contrary, that comes to exclude a Kupach. Rav Shimon Omer, Tanur, Tanur, Shnei Pa'amim, means, Acha Shteach Yosem Batanur, Echad Shteach Afiyosem Batanur, Ve'echad Shteach Deshem Batanur. It means, says Rav Shimon, means they have to be baked in the oven, but it also means that they first become Kodesh in the oven. Meaning, in other words, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta about, well, we're going to talk a little bit about over here as well, but, there was an oven in the Beis Hamikdash made out of metal. Clay shardis, as we learned earlier in this Masechta, have to be made out of metal. So the idea is that if it's the baking that makes them fully Kaddish, then the oven itself that they're baked in has to be a clay shardis. And in that case, Rav Shimon is saying, that's exactly it. So you put the flour ahead of time and measure it out. It's not yet Kaddish, Kaddish as a goof. At that point, for example, if it becomes Tameh, you could redeem it. You could buy it back from Hekdish. If it goes out of the Azara, it doesn't become Possel, etc. Says Rav Shimon, when it's actually baked in the oven, namely that metal oven, which is a clay shardis, then at that point it has its kedusha. That we learn from one time that it says tanur, and from the other one we learn that it actually has to be baked in an oven and not in a kupach or any of these other appliances that we mentioned. So the Gemara asked him, yes, Rav Shimon high svara. Does Rav Shimon in fact hold that way, that the oven in the Beis Mikdash is a kli shardes and it's mekadesh the menachas that are baked in it? And we're going to learn later on in the Masechta about the shtei alechem and lechem aponim. V'atnan, we learn in a Mishnah later on in the Masechta, Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Shimon says you should always be accustomed to say, be aware that this is definitively the halacha, shtei alechem v'lechem aponim, k'sheres ba'azvara, or k'sheres v'beis pagi, that the shtei alechem and v'lechem aponim are kosher if they're baked in the azara, but they're also kosher if they're baked in beis pagi. Beis pagi is an area outside the azara. It was an area annexed to Yerushalayim. Elsewhere, Rashi explains that the word pagi, we find in Bava Metzia that the word pagi means the reins and harness of an animal, so it means something that's added to the animal, and therefore, in a similar sense, base pagi is an area that was added and annexed to Yerushalayim. It's outside the Azara, at any rate. So I've seen an explanation that basically base pagi is you visit the old city nowadays, you have the eastern wall of the Har HaBayis is basically the eastern wall of the city, but you have a little area outside it nowadays. The Arabs have cemeteries and other such things over there, and you have a road there by which you can drive by on the edge of Nahal Kidron. So I've seen it suggested that base pagi is that area. In any case, the point is it's outside the Azara. And Rav Shimon says that you could bake the shtei alechem and lechem upon him there. Now, if the oven was a kli shardes, then you couldn't do that, because anything that's made in a kli shardes has to be inside the azara. So how, according to Rav Shimon, would you be able to, how can he say that the tan, that we learn from one word tanur, that the oven itself is mekadesh them, in that case, then they couldn't be done in beis pagi, they would have to be done dafke in the azara. So the answer is, Amar Rava, Ema, fine, you have to fix up what Rav Shimon said. He doesn't mean that the Tanu is actually Makadish them. Sheyech Geshen L'Shem Tanu. When he's first Makdish the flour, he should say that he's Makdish it, having it with the intention that it will be baked in, that it will be baked in an oven. So one point is, in other words, so it would mean that he has to actually say that he's planning to use it, to bring it for Beit Mincha. The Ravid actually has an explanation that it means that if he said that he's going to bring it as a machvas and then instead he brings it baked in an oven, then it would be possible. So to begin with, he had in mind that it was going to be for an oven. Tosfos has some difficulty with Rashi's explanation. It comes out from Rashi's explanation that because if we're saying that they can be baked in base pagi, wouldn't they become possible right then by being taken out? But no, Tosfos points out that it doesn't necessarily become possible, it doesn't necessarily become possible immediately when it's taken out of the Azara, but still Tosfos says it would be degrading that you have something that's supposed to be in the Azara and it's taken out of it. For that matter, Rabbeinu Gershom points out as well, Klei Shardus, I'm a Kaddish only in the Azara. So if the oven's a Klei Shardus, then it wouldn't work outside the Azara anyway. Anyway, Tosfos, anyway, Tosfos points out on the face of it, can't there be a difference between the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem upon him versus other Menachos? Tosfos says that later in the that in Masechta Zvachim we learned that there was only one oven made out of metal and they use it for all those purposes in the Bismikdash. So that's what Reb Shimon is learning. So Rava says that's what Reb Shimon is learning from one of the times that it says Tanur, that when, not that you actually bake it in the Azara, because again, according to Reb Shimon, you could bake it in base pagi, but rather that you have to say verbally to begin with that you're being makdish this flour to bring as a mafe Tanur. Now, we have another machorkas of Reb Shimon, of Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon that we had in the Mishnah. We said that if a person says, I'm going to bring a baked mincha, then it has to be all chalas or all rekikin, according to Reb Yehuda. And according to Reb Shimon, it can be part of one and part of the other. So, Tanan Abana, we learn in a braisa that discusses the sources for these dinim. When the pasuk says, v'chis sakriv, the pasuk says, when you offer a korban mincha, that's baked in an oven. That means ketapriv lasas dvar reshus. First of all, that means when you want to do something voluntarily, this is a reshus. It's not when the pasuk says v'chisakriv, you shouldn't think that it means that you're obligated to bring a mincha baked in an oven. It means if you want to. It's like all the other menachos that are discussed in that section, which are all medava, which are all voluntarily. So when you want to do a dvar reshus korban mincha, then you bring this korban mincha. Now, Omer Rav Yehuda, minayim la'oyim harei la minchas ma'afes. Rav Yehuda says, how do we know then that if a person says I'm going to bring a baked mincha, shalayavi mechza chalas and mechza rekikin, he can't do half chalas and half rekikin. Tamad leimar. Therefore, the pasuk is korban mincha. It says bring a korban mincha, which means korban echad. Amarti l'chov la'shnayim or shloisha korbanos. So it has to be dafka one mincha, not two or three. So in other words, in short, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the very fact that it calls it mincha implies that it has to be dapped for one specific kind and not a mixture of different kinds. Rabbi Elazar Moshe Horowitz in the back of the Gemara asks, true, I understand. We said there's the two types of baked menacha, chalas and rekikin. What third one would there be? You often have this expression in the Gemara, v'lo shnayim v'shloisha, but not two or three. But over here, how could there possibly be three? So he goes on to explain that the machlokas between Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda is when the Torah says that you can bring one, you can bring the other, doesn't mean you have three possibilities. You can bring all one, all the other, or half and half. So if you say that you can do that, according to Reb Shimon, then it comes out there really are three different types, and therefore Reb Yehuda is saying nothing of the above. It means within each type, there's only one. Amalur Reb Shimon, but Reb Shimon says to Reb Yehuda, "V'chinam of korban shnei pamim." After all, does it say in the pasuk the word korban twice? It doesn't say korban. When the pasuk goes like this, "V'chisaku korban mincha mafei sano." If you bring a korban mincha that's baked in an oven, then you can bring it. You bring it solus chalas solus. It's fine flour. Chalas matzis b'lulz b'shemen. Chalas with matzis that are mixed with oil or kikei matzis meshuchim b'shemen and wafers of matzahs that are smeared with oil. Sort of Shimon points out, if it said korban by each one of them individually, if it said b'chisak of korban mincha mafei taner, korban chalas matzahs, korban retikei matzahs, then you would say, yeah, it means each one has to be a separate kind of korban. V'alei v'nemer ela korban echad. The fact is, it says only one korban, v'nemer by chalas retikin, and within that pasuk it says chalas and retikin. So therefore, they can all be called one korban. Me'ata. Well then, based on that, says Reb Shimon, rotza lahavi chalas, maybe. So if you want to bring chalas, you could bring chalas. Retikin, maybe, and if you want to bring retikin, you could bring retikin. Mechza chalas and mechza retikin, maybe. And even if you want to do half and half, then you could also do that. So what do you do? What do you do, says Reb Shimon, if you have the two different types, how do you
If you have the two, if you have the two different types, then how do you then how do you take the koymets from both of them? Says Rav Shimon. Boilalon. Afterwards, you mix them up. Now we're going to learn later in the Masechta that when it comes to fried and baked menachas, so when it comes to a minchas soilus, of course you just take the koymets from the flour as is. But when you have a baked or fried mincha, which has a it has a consistency to it, so what do you do in order to take the koymets from it? So we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that what you do is you break it up into pieces. So now Rav Shimon is saying the breaking up that you do into pieces is actually that you. You break it up into you crumble it up into you crumble them up into pieces. So once you're crumbling it up, then it all becomes then now you have it's all now you just have a bunch of crumbs. And now when you take the koymets from it, then you can now when you take the koymets from it, you're able to take the koymets from all of them combined. So therefore, he says that you do that. So bolon, you crumble them up. And then you mix them with oil, the koymets mishneim, and you do the kmitzah from both of them. Even if you, when you did the kmitzah, if you only happened to get flour from one of them, you'd still be yotze, because according to him, they're basically one kind of mincha. So that's Rav Shimon is saying that you would do it that way, and it's all considered one mincha. And as far as the kmitzah, you mix them together to do that. Rabbi Yosi ber Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yosi ber Rabbi Yehuda says, no, minayin lo Omer, harayah lai minchas mafe. How do we know that if a person says, I'm going to bring a mincha made out of, that was baked, shalo yavi mechza chalos mechza rikikin, he can't bring half chalos and half rikikin. So Rabbi Yosi ber Rabbi Yehuda, of course, is following his father's shitta that was said in the Mishnah that you can't. So Rabbi Yehuda had said that you can't because he says, when the pasuk says mincha means one mincha, not various types. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying, I have another drasha from a pasuk to tell us that it has to be only of one type. So how do we know? Talmud Lomar, because the pasuk says in Parshas Tzav, b'chol mincha she'to offer batanur, any mincha that's baked in an oven, b'chol nasa v'marcheshes v'al machvas, or anything that's made in a marcheshes or on a machvas, la'koyin amakriv oisa loisiyah, it should go to the koyin who offered it. Which means, and that doesn't just mean that koyin, actually, what it means is, as we learned in Tzvachim, it means any koyin who was eligible to offer it. So as we learned there, it means that if a koyin was tamei at the time of the avodah, for example, then he doesn't get a portion of it. And similarly, various other tmeim that we talked about over there, and various other psulim and onan and so forth, we said an exception is a bal mum. The Torah specifically carves out an exception for him. Anyway, the pasuk says that anything that's baked or fried goes to the koyin who offered it. And the pasuk continues, v'chol mincha v'lulav hashemen v'chareva, any mincha that is mixed with oil or that's dry, v'chol bnei Aaron tiyeh, it should be for all the sons of Aaron. Everybody shares in it equally. The Rambam, by the way, explains what the pasuk is saying. I mean, so why does it divide it into two sections and makes it sound as though the first kind goes exclusively to the koyin who did it, and the second one goes to every koyin, where in fact the din is all of them go to every koyin. The Rambam explains that basically the idea is you might think that when it comes to a minchas soilus, for example, you might think, well, look, I have to bake it in order to eat it. I'm not going to eat raw flour. So why should I want a tiny piece of a minchas soilus? I can't really do anything useful with it. I can't really bake it or fry it or anything to eat it. So I might as well, so instead of giving it out to all the koyanim and each one is only going to get a tiny bit of it, I might as well keep it for myself and I'll trade off with another koyan for the next mincha, and he'll get the whole thing. He'll get all the shidayim of this one and I'll get all the shidayim of that one. So the Rambam says, therefore, the pasuk says, no, l'chol b'nei Aaron tiyeh ish kachet, it does have to go to all the koyanim. If that means that each one is only going to get a tiny amount of flour, okay, that's how it is. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda continues. So we learn from the fact that it says v'chol by both of them, ma v'chol ha'om l'mata, shnei minin chalukin, just like the second v'chol, where it says a mincha mixed with oil or dry, of necessity is two types of korbanos, because obviously there's a big difference between a dry mincha and that doesn't have oil and one that does have oil. Therefore, he says the v'chol in the first pasuk, when it says v'chol nasa v'machreshes v'al machvas, also has to mean two different types of korbanos. And therefore also, so you actually have three times in the pasukim where it says v'chol. So rather, the second b'chol refers to machesheshes and machvas, which are clearly two different types, as we said. One is softer and the other is harder. So those are clearly two different types. So the same way, when it says v'chol mimchasha to'ofa b'tanur, where it also uses this word v'chol, implies that there are two distinct types that are made in a tanur, and therefore chal and chalas in rikikin, and therefore you can't interchange them. So therefore you can't do like Reb Shimon says and do some of one and half of the other. Okay. So fine. So Reb Yosi Reb Yehuda, as the Gemara is going to explain soon that even though Reb Yosi Reb Yehuda seems to be upholding his father's opinion, we're going to say soon there was a nachamina between them. But first, let's go back to the machlokas of Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon themselves. So now, Reb Shimon had pointed out that it doesn't say korban twice, it just says chalas matzahs, or kikei matzahs, implying that there are two subtypes within the same korban, and therefore you could mix and match. So the question is, what Reb Yehuda shapir from Reb Shimon? Doesn't Reb Shimon have a good point? What would Reb Yehuda answer to that? The answer is, Amalach, Reb Yehuda would answer you, Kivin dechtid b'shemen b'shemen. Yes, it's true, it doesn't say twice korban, but it does say twice b'shemen, that they have to be made in oil. Kaman dechtid korban korban dami, therefore that's the equivalent of it saying twice, korban, and therefore they're still considered distinct. Reb Shimon, what would Reb Shimon answer to that? He says, no, you have to say Bashemin twice. There's nothing extra over there. Elik sib Bashemin Bashemin. If it didn't say twice Bashemin, have I'm in a dafka mechza chalas or mechza rikikin? Maybe on the contrary. Maybe it means that when you're doing a baked mincha, dafka has to be half chalas and half rikikin. Ava chalas l'chudayu or rikikin l'chudayu emaloi. Maybe you can't bring exclusively chalas or exclusively rikikin. Kamash malon, therefore, with the extra time Bashemin, the Torah is telling you that no, each one you could bring by itself. But in addition, you could also bring part one and part the other. So basically, as we said before, the Hagoros of Elazar Moshe Horowitz and the Mitzvah Eson explain basically the question is, sometimes we have the Torah will give a list of things and it's machlokas whether you need the word machlokas in a number of places in Shas, whether you need the word oi between them to say, which means or, to say that's one or the other, or whether even the Torah mentions them with a vav between them can also mean or. So they explain that the underlying machlokas between them is about that, and therefore that drives the rest of this over there of whether, how many different types there are. Again, as we said before, one way of looking at it is Reb Shimon would say, in effect, there are three kinds of mafatanur that you could bring. Or chalas, or rikikin, or a little bit of both. Because Reb Shimon would say, if it actually meant it's only one or only the other, then it would have used the word oi. Whereas according to Reb Yehuda, that's not necessary, and therefore according to him, when it says Bashemen, means it's one or the other, but not both. So that explains the machlokas Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon. Fine. What about we said Reb Yosi Reb Yehuda, Hainu Avur, isn't he saying the same thing as his father? Meaning, in other words, why does he need it? Why is he bringing a new drosha, implying that he has an opinion of his own? So the answer is ikamenai di'i avad. The nafkamina would be, what if he did it b'di'evad? According to Reb Yehuda, where he says that it's supposed to be you learn from korban echad, then fine, b'di'evad. If you did some of one and some of the other, then you're still yotze. But according to Reb Yosi Reb Yehuda, who learns it from the fact that the Torah is saying v'chol, and each v'chol means two distinct types that are unrelated, then according to him, if he's a half of one and half of the other, it actually wouldn't work, and you're not yotze the korban at all. The Karen Oda brings a different explanation that v'di'evad would mean not when he actually brought it that way, but when he said to begin with that I'm going to bring half chalas and half rikikin, so then Rabbi Yehuda would allow him to bring half one, half the other, whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say that not. Because Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is learning from Blula and Chareva. Blula means a mincha mixed with oil. Chareva means a mincha schoita. And as we learned before, you can't interchange them. You can't bring a regular mincha without oil, and you can't bring a mincha schoita with oil. So therefore, those are clearly two different distinct types. And therefore, says Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, the same thing, chalas and rikikin are two distinct types, and you can't mix and match. And if he does, then according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, it would not be, he would not be yotzei. So we'll begin a little bit of the next paragraph as well, especially because the next daf is quite large. So this perek that we're starting now, perek Lishmol, is going to talk all about the korban. Is going to talk all about the korban oimer. In the Mishnayos, actually, the order of the prokim is in a different order. The Mishnayos, and it seems a number of the Rishonim had it this way as well, that this is the 10th perek of the Masechta. So here we have, we just finished a perek that deals with the basic din, with many of the basic dinim of Menachos, and then we're going to have the 7th perek starts talking about the difference we talked about, which ones require tenufa, which ones require hagosha. So the 7th, what we have in front of us is the 7th parak, is going to talk about which ones have knitza done versus which ones are completely burnt and so forth. Meanwhile, though, and then the korban oimer, according to that, would be later on in the sechta after it deals with the regular menachas and the korban tzibur, then it would talk about the oimer. Whereas over here we have in the Gemara, and Tosfos it seems has it this way as well, that has this perek over here, has this perek about the Omer over here. So one possibility would be, in fact, in the previous perek we learned some of the dinim of the Omer, so now the Mishnah would continue talking all about the Omer. Now, we know that the Omer, like all Korbanos Tzibur, is brought even on Shabbos. Nowadays, the 16th of Nisan, which is the day that the Omer is brought, can't fall on Shabbos, but back in the day, when they were Mekadosh HaPiyoriyah, then it could. So let's start by talking about the dinim of how it was brought on Shabbos versus weekday. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Omer, Hoyabab Shabbos Nisholosh Sin. Now you have like this also. You have the harvesting of the grain, and then they have to sift it. The oimer is made from barley flour, but it's made from the best grade of barley flour, which is called, it's called in this week's parasha, geres. So you have when it comes to most menachos, which are made out of wheat flour, they're made out of soilus, which is the finest grade of wheat flour. We'll talk about it in more detail later in the Masechta. So now when it comes to barley, it also has to be the best grade of flour, which is called geres. So you need to sift it. That means you're not going to be using everything that you milled. So therefore, in other words, you have to start out with a larger amount of grain, and eventually you're going to mill it and you're going to sift it and end up with the amount, with the one isodin that you need for the omer. So it'd be shmol omer. Omer, hoyabab shabbos mishalosh sin. If the 16th of Nisan came out on Shabbos, then they would bring the, they would harvest 3 saw of barley, and then they would go through all the procedures and end up with an isodin of flour. But if it was a weekday, then instead they would harvest 5 saw. The idea being, in other words, that if it's Shabbos, Rabbi Shmuel wants you to minimize. It's true that you are allowed to harvest the Omer on Shabbos. So we're going to learn at the end of the perek that there are Tanoim who hold it's not, but Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel holds that it is, that the harvesting of it is Doicha Shabbos, as we're going to learn at the end of the perek from a pasuk. So therefore it will be harvested on Shabbos, but nevertheless we do want to minimize the amount of Chilul Shabbos, and therefore on Shabbos we'll have them harvest less and put in extra effort to get the Isorin of fine flour out of it, but on weekdays we might as well do it the easier way, and therefore start with 5 saw. Tosfos points out that why are we beginning with the case when it comes out on Shabbos? Why don't we begin with the basic dinim of the Omer? Tosfos says because there Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim both agree about the amount that you harvest, therefore the Mishnah starts with that. Another point is because of Kovod, Shoshanim Ladovid points out because of Kovod Shabbos, and because first we want to tell us the basic fact that you even harvest the Omer on Shabbos as opposed to the other Tanoim who say that you don't. Anyway, the Chum and Echad Shabbos, Echad Chol, Mishalosh Hayabah. The Chum say no, whether it was Shabbos or weekdays, always they would harvest 3 saw of barley, and then they would sift that and go through all the procedures to get the Yisar and the flour. Okay. Another machlokas about Shabbos versus weekday. Reb Chanina Sgana Kohen Omer, but Shabbos hoyo nitzah biyochid. If the 16th of Nisan fell on Shabbos, so that they're cutting the barley on Friday night, then they would have only one person doing the harvesting. Over Mago Echad, he would be using only one sickle, over Kupa Achas, and gather it all into one basket. Ubachoil, whereas if the 16th of Nisan fell on a weekday, Bishloisha, Bisholish Kurbis, Bisholish Magdolis, then you would have three people doing it, they would have three baskets, and there would be three, and there would be three sickles. Because we want to publicize it, we want to publicize, as we're going to learn in this parak, by Tussim, held that the Omer was always brought on Sunday, they didn't hold on, they held Mimachas, so Shabbos means the day after Shabbos, and therefore we want to publicize it so that it's not, that it's a different day of the week, and therefore, they would have many people do it, whereas Rav Chanina Sagan HaKohanim says, if it was Shabbos, fine, we do want to publicize it, but on the other hand, we don't want, there should be more Chilul Shabbos than necessary, and therefore, you would have only one person do it. Whether Shabbos or weekday, b'shloisha, b'sholosh kubbas, b'sholosh magolas, either way, you have three people gathering it into three baskets and harvesting it with three sickles. So in other words, we're not going to draw a distinction. We always want to have that publicity. So the Gemara says, "Bishleimer Rabbanan." Now I understand the reasoning of the Chachamim, why they say, as far as the number of saw that you harvest, there's no difference between Shabbos and weekday, because Kasavi Yisorin Mufchum Bishloisha Sin Asi, Bishloisha Sin Asi, because they hold that you can get a perfectly good, a perfectly excellent quality of geres of barley flour out of three saw of plain flour. You sift it many times, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta. You sift it 13 times, v'loshna b'chol, v'loshna b'shabbos, so it doesn't matter weekday or Shabbos, either way, you sift it enough times and you'll get good quality flour. Eller b'shmol, my kasava, but why does Rabbi Shmuel say there's a difference between Shabbos and weekday? If he says you're only going to get the best quality if you start out with five saw, after the b'shabbos nami, then even on Shabbos, you want the korban omer to be the best, and if it is doich Shabbos, then if it is Doicha Shabbos, then why should we do any less on Shabbos and make it harder to get the good Isarin? Im Sholosh Asi, but if you can just as well get a good Isarin out of three Sa'ah for the Bachel Nami, then even on weekdays they should just harvest three. Why are they doing five? So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Kasover Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel holds like this, Isarin Muvcha B'loi Tircha Asi Mechamesh, to do it without Tircha, without having to sift it extra carefully, then it's better if you start with five. It'll be easier that way. The Tircha Asi Mishalish, but if you put a lot of extra effort into it and sift it extra times or extra carefully or whatever, then you can make it out of three. So on weekdays, we would rather bring it out of Mechamesh, we would rather start with five, because that way it'll be better. That way we'll have better quality. But this way you'll sift it and you'll get out the best soilus, the best geres. The Shabbos, but on Shabbos, says Rabbi Shmuel, Mutav Shiyarba B'Malacha Achas, better that he should be doing, and you have to be overriding Shabbos with one malacha over and over again, b'har kodah, namely with the sifting, that he's going to have to sift it again and again and again, much more than the usual 13 times, v'al yabra, b'malachas harbe, rather than having to increase by adding many different malachas, because then if you have five saw, then each of those, all of that grain, you have to do a lot of extra malachas. You have extra harvesting, you have extra winnowing, extra butter, etc. All the various malachas that are involved in making bread, you're have to do more and more of those different malachas. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says, better to just start out with three saw. Yes, it means you're going to have to sift it extra time, but still better to do it that way rather than doing extra of many different malachas. So fine. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, talking about another reason why Rabbi Shmuel would make the distinction between Shabbos and weekdays, and then we're going to get into some general discussions about Hilchos Shabbos, and eventually get back more to the dinim of the Omer.